Welcome to Coffee and Uchiokeke. My name is Salma Uchiokeke, and today's guest is Ato Arinze, a Nigerian sculptor, author, and mentor, currently serving as interim president of the Sculptors Association of Nigeria. Born in Mushin, Lagos, and originally from Onitsha, he is known for his portrait sculptures and public works, including a bust of Dr. Nnamdi Azikiwe and several major commissions in Abuja. Ato studied art at Federal Polytechnic Okun and Yaba College of Technology and has worked as a full-time artist since 1993. He co-founded the Visions in Clay Artists Network and coordinates the Art Zero Group in addition to his studio practice. He's committed to supporting young artists. Hello, Ato.
Yeah, hello, Salma. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Ato. Having you here brings back fond memories of how we first met. It was during the embossment of my father, Uchiokeke's tomb. My sister, Ijoma Uchiokeke, directed me to you, insisting that you were the right person for the job. I never asked her how you two met, aside from the obvious connections in the art community. I would love to hear the story. If you could share how you both came to know each other, it would be a really nice tribute to Ijoma's memory.
Bless her soul. We met when she was working with Milima Art Gallery as a curator, and we became good friends. And I guess at that period, I used to take my works to the gallery. That is how she knew about my relief portraits, sculptures, and personalities. You know, I know I took some of the samples to the gallery then. So I was very happy when you called me and you said that she recommended that you contact me.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I always wanted to find out about that. So you've created several public works, including an embossment of Uchiokeke on his tomb. What makes a piece a masterpiece in your eyes? And how do you approach creating work that will outlive you and resonate beyond its time?
A masterpiece is what makes an artist a master. It's that work, that one work the artist created that resonate with everybody, that makes people to talk. It is that one piece that is what we make everybody to celebrate the artist, even when the artist is gone. For me, the way I approach my work is I try as much as possible when I have an idea. I try to research into the idea. And after that, I start the work. While working, I'm also trying to visualize how well people will receive the work. And basically, one of the things that inspires me into creating works as actually history of my people, events as they happen. I like to play the role of a journalist as an artist. So I try as much as possible. Because I also, with my research, I noticed that most of the great works of art we celebrate today always have this element of history attached to it. So I also try to see that most of the works I do, you can look at those works and be able to see the history of Nigeria, the story of Nigerians in it.
Your concept of masterpiece, is there any place for artistry, skill, or workmanship?
Yes, of course. One of the things that makes a piece a masterpiece is also the technical proficiency that people can feel or see in the work. So it's not just your concept alone. When a work is declared a masterpiece, it means it met with all the qualities, technical proficiency, mastering of the use of materials, and also the concept.
Oh, how it's even received over time, isn't it? Because sometimes things change. So I've noticed that your work often draws from your cultural and spiritual roots. I mean, it's quite clear from what you've said so far. Would you say that you have been influenced by the natural synthesis movement of the Zaria Art Society? If so, what role does this movement play in sustaining your growth as an artist?
Yeah, the natural synthesis movement of the Zaria Art has actually being a blessing to Nigerian art, though it's not something new in the world of art, because it happens in every country. In art history, you notice at early stage, for young artists at their early stage, they try to come together to create a particular philosophy that will guide how they go about their studio practice, how they create their works, which is what gave rise to all the movements we know. Of course, I believe the Zaria art schools were also influenced by these movements of the past before them. It was a good thing they started it while they were young, and also it has also influenced many of us. At one point, my own generation of artists then, I was around the year 2000, we created a group called Art Zero Group. And I remember in our first meeting, I made the artists in attendance to know that what we're trying to do is something that was done before. We're using the Zaria Art Society as a template. And it's very important then that we start something just like they did in their time. So this natural synthesis, which is all about you borrowing from this culture, that culture, infusing your own tradition or culture into your art studio practice. So this, it influenced the way I work in my studio, which is basically most of my inspiration. So most of the artists that inspire me, the likes of Henry Moore, Augustus Rodin, Michelangelo, and Brancusi, the Romanian sculptor. But then I took their techniques and style. But my concepts are usually influenced from my own environment. For me, I believe that is what the natural synthesis is all about.
So I'm just curious to know. I mean, this movement happened in the 1960s, in late 1950s, started then. And when you started your Art Zero in the year 2000, what did you say?
We started 2002.
In the year 2002, you felt, what did you, was there a need to revive that revolution? Did you notice any requirement for that? For instance, maybe a lot of people have moved away from that influence. Maybe you needed to remind people again before you now went on with your own project, or was it a continuation, sort of as far all the years that had gone past and all the new things that had happened in societies globally and right here with us? What was, I'm just trying to find out how come there was that need to point them back to the natural synthesis movement of the Zaria Art Society when you started the Art Zero projects in 2002.
Yeah, the influence of they are coming together in late 50s, in the late 50s and early 60s was actually what also made us to want to come together in the year 2000. Because we felt there was a gap, particularly among the young artists of that time. And that gap was, there was no serious platform, except if you go to galleries, and galleries will look at you unless they see that your works are sellable and all that. So we felt we need to come together and organize ourselves and create our own platform, which has been something that has been happening through the ages since Renaissance till date. Every young generation, every new generation of artists, is always good that they start their career by forming themselves into groups. Not just forming themselves into groups to create platforms to exhibit their works, and also to build a philosophy around what they do, what they create in their studios, which is what the Zaria Art Society did in their own time. Anyone with the Negritude movement did that too in their own time. True, Sivanotnalis and Co. did that in their own time. And if you look into the history of art, those artists we celebrate today, actually, if you go back and read about it, you find that in their young days, they started as a... So it's now the unfortunate thing with us at that time was that we didn't have the intellectual capacity of the Zaria Art Society members. We came to meetings, we're always talking about selling, how to sell art, how to do that. That challenge is still very much with us today.
What is your philosophy at the Art Zero?
Well, philosophy then was one to bring art closer to people in our communities and also to create that kind of art that will have great meaning, great influence on the people. Because those days too, we find that even till date, every exhibition happens in the highbrow areas where the artists believe that that's where the people who buy art are. So what we had in mind then was to bring art on the mainland. So we created an exhibition called Art on the Mainland, which we organized for 3 years before we closed it down, before we went on recess. But it was also very hard to convince the artists that we can do shows on the mainland. It doesn't have to be on the island where the money is all the time.
Oh, from what you're saying, I'm beginning to see what you actually mean by bringing art closer to the people. What you mean is in terms of physically bringing it closer to people and not concentrating it in locations where they have predominantly had them. So apart from on the mainland, where else have you taken this movement to, for instance? Maybe outside of Lagos, so?
Yeah, the fourth edition of the Art on the Mainland, the plan was to make it a traveling exhibition. Already we had plans to take it to Benin, from Benin to Onitsha and to Abuja. But unfortunately, well, we did call for entry, the response was very low. So we had to cancel it. Because this also boils down to the attitude of the artists. And then what happened that period was another organization came up. At the same time, we did call for entry. They too did call for entry, and the exhibition was to take place on the island. And that overshadowed our own call for entry. So everybody went to. And so, and we, the coordinators, we felt we've done our best and we can't force anybody to enter for our own show. So we decided to shut down the event. So it's a big challenge, and it will take a lot to be able to convince artists in Nigeria that art exhibitions are not meant for the elite alone.
So what would you say is the difference with getting the kind of followership that the Natural Synthesis Movement of the Zaria Art Society managed to get over time as well? What would you say is that thing that has helped this movement to still be influential even now?
Well, for me, the main difference is the Zaria Art Societies were intellectuals. They were well-grounded in the history of art, and also they're also very much committed to their practice. Then also, if you go back, you find that Bruce, for instance, who is a member, did his first exhibition in his hometown. Even Professor Ucho Keke did his first exhibition in where he grew up.
So that is really the main difference. And today, if you want to impact on these artists, if you want to carry them along forward, it really does have to have an intellectual framework, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, what I want to say is that intellect is what makes it different between an artist and a craftsman.
As someone who has studied the great artists and now mentors others, how do you balance being inspired by the masters while still developing your own voice? What advice would you give to artists who are in the early stages of discovering themselves?
Yeah, well, I've actually studied a lot of biographies, autobiographies of great masters, and very happy that I've been able to allow some of their experiences to impact on my life and also the way I go about my studio practice. And I'm still learning, but there are some aspects, areas I still find very hard. But it's a learning process. And for me, the way I balance this is I try to learn from particularly their works and the impact of feel their works makes in their society. I always want to see how I can infuse that into my own works. And for me, I'm seeing a lot of great results as per that. Now, the advice I have for the young upcoming artists is they should try as much as possible to also learn from the masters. What these great masters have in common is that they have their own personality. First, while they are developing themselves. They were also building up a library for themselves. I can't remember the first time I met the first thing he told me is, read, 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 draw, draw, draw. That's what makes you a great artist. So for me, the young artists, they should try as much as possible to study, read, research before they develop whatever concept they want and before they create their works. It is very, very important. Reading is actually what makes an artist, not just what you're producing in your studio.
And what is the authentic voice you're developing for yourself?
Well, for me, I'm still growing as an artist. And one of the things that I've noticed from people's comment is that they usually say, your work is too mystical. Your work is too surrealistic. Some will say, those who are very much religious inclined will say, your work is very fearful. So for me, that mystical undertone is something I cherish in my works.
That's how you enhance your cultural and spiritual roots. Considering your connection to films such as pottery and sculpture, how do you think contemporary artists can honor indigenous methods while also pushing the boundaries of contemporary African art?
Yeah, nothing has really changed, except maybe with modern technology and all that, where the processes are still almost the same thing. So for us, for me, yeah, we need to learn. We have a lot to learn from the indigenous artists or craftsmen in terms of the use of materials, the technique, the process. Well, you find recently we had a workshop with a local potter. We just found that all we've been doing, they have a different approach to the art of pottery, which is even much easier than what I do in my studio.
Probably more environmentally friendly, right?
Exactly. So some after workshop, I also felt there is need for me to try to imbibe some of those things. Imagine when we do firing 6 hours, 8 hours. But with the kind of method they use, the firing was just for 2 hours.
And you achieved the same.
Exactly.
Wow.
There's a lot to learn from the local artists, the way they work. So if we infuse that with our own, with the way we also work, our processes we use, studio lives will be much more better.
And the way you work right now is already inspired by your environment. It's just a more modern approach, but possibly without having done the research. Because if you had done the research first, you will only improve on what is already on the ground.
Not that we didn't do the research, you can't actually cover all the areas, particularly when it comes to pottery. We noticed that the approach this local potter came from Abeokuta, for instance, their approach is different from the potters we find around Abuja, like the quarry potters and all that. Mm-hmm. And also the approach is different from potters in Ishiagu pottery in other locations in Anambra, Enugu State in the east. Mm-hmm. So, like I've had experience with a local pot from Badagry, for instance. Badagry is in Lagos here, southwest. And you can see southwest to Lagos, to have the distance is far, but they also have their own different approach.
Mm.
You can't actually cover everything, but whatever little you've learned from a particular location, you can actually use that to improve on what you already know, the modern way of handling pottery and all that. But one should always have an open mind. But even if you go outside the country, they also have different methods and approaches to which is indigenous to their own locality.
Mm-hmm.
So the lesson is that as a practicing artist, we should always have an open mind to be able to absorb what we feel that will help us to be better in what we do.
Mm. I was listening to you and my mind was churning around the model of the natural synthesis movement because it involved over time, even from different parts of Africa, for instance. It meant that you had more people collating and coming back with adding to the body of work by sharing their own observations and their own experiences and just thinking that that would be also one way to be able to get more information in that could be useful. I hope it's not like at zero, you're inviting people over or you go as a group always to these locations. Individuals from different parts of the country and different parts of Africa, for instance, could go out and study their own environment and come back and give the feedback. And that will definitely help. So you guys can collectively see what can be added to what you're doing, what does not add much more value to it, apart from what you now read. Thank God it's a global community now with the internet, what you also get from other foreign countries. I think that way, you know, it will be faster to spread out and collate these things that could be very, very useful.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. The influence and the importance of the natural city as society, the Zaria as society to not just Nigerian, but African and generally, is the main fact that first they were able to come together in their young days and also were able to build up a good philosophy around what they do. And they all allow this to influence what they do there. Then also in the process, they also attach so much importance to documentation of what they did, which should actually find, even I myself, I'm finding it very hard also to do that. The one thing I love and I like about them is all the active members of the Zaria societies, they paid much attention to documenting their studio activities, their works. That I saw that in Professor Chukwuka's works and also some of his books and all that. I saw that with Dr. Bruce, even Professor Grillo, Demas.
Yes, Demas Moko is almost 90. He's going to be 90 this year, but he's busy documenting. I had the privilege to have a conversation with him. It was in 2019. Well, we started that conversation in 2019. We talked more in 2023 when he was now launching his books. And then he took a risk of waiting till the end to document. Some people like my father started documenting from day one.
Yes.
Some people like Bruce Onabebeya started documenting before the middle. And something like Demas Moko started at the late stage. And he said that was a terrible risk he took. But now he's documenting and he's busy, very, very actively doing that. So do you think that it is possible for us to get sustainable growth amongst artists, I mean, in the real sense, without having another generation of people that are documenting? I mean, it should really be like a continuation, so to speak. But so much has happened within that time range. A lot of new techniques, a lot of new things have come out in the world. And it would be good to have these things documented. And I don't know if you are recommending this to young artists.
Yes, of course. I do that a lot. Documentation is not just your record. Even the work of art itself you created is a document on its own. And you're looking at the work, you're seeing the technique used, you can say the technique, the method, the process and all that. But it's also very important, these documentations are in paper. Like with a lot of the industrial training students that comes around, I will normally show them my first sketchbook, which I used in 1986 during my OND Polio Corp. I also show them my ND, actually ND1, year one, some of my year one assignments.
They will see how you've continued to grow and evolve, isn't it?
Exactly. So even if you're not recording them in paper and all that, it's always good to keep something every year. It's always good to keep one or two, three artworks. It's not like you produce everything and you sell out everything. So you're keeping one work every year to every period to represent a particular point in your life is also a form of documentation.
Interesting to hear your views on building legacies that continue to grow and evolve. I mean, how are you building your own legacy?
Actually, the main purpose of our exist as humans. Without that, you just came to the world and you just went away. So it's very important that we try as much as possible to be mindful of activities and what we plan to achieve in our existence now. So for me, well, I knew about legacies as early as when I was young, 17. I knew about this by reading a lot of spiritual literatures before I went into school.
It would be interesting to hear your views on building legacies that continue to grow and evolve. How are you building your own legacy?
I started my studio in 1993 with an NGO, or rather with a foundation, which I call Art Trust Organization. Even though I didn't have money then, and I also believe that they say time is money. So I always give a percentage of my time mentoring young artists and young people around me. So my studio has always been open from the beginning. So I knew every day, wherever a young artist come knocking, I would drop whatever I'm doing to see what I can do for them. At that level, what they need is not money, but rather advice on how they can navigate their journey in the world of art. So I started this very early. And also, when I started making money, I try as much as possible to devote 10% of my earnings. And at the beginning, I was giving it out to any young artist that needs. Then later, I started using that same 10% to buy off their works. And if, as a young artist, then if people buy your work, it gives you more joy than them dashing you money. So today, I've been known within the art circle that I've been of good help to a lot of young artists. And for me, that's part of the legacies that I would wish to leave. As one is growing older and also becoming more popular in the field, I feel like I can do more in that area. And the other legacy is for me to be able to create that work.
Create a body of work.
Not just a body of work, but there is always that one work. Everybody, we always try to refer to. And the mere mentioning of your name, their mind goes to. And when you talk about Anya, your mind goes to Ben and Wong. When you talk about David, your mind goes to Michelangelo. That. So for me, I would like to have that kind of work before I leave this earth.
So you're trying to make your own masterpiece, so to speak.
I'm working towards that. Maybe I even don't need, but I don't know.
Exactly, because in your definition of masterpiece, you also mention the influence of other people. I mean, how they receive it is also a whole lot. And sometimes people receive things even more in your absence.
Yes, the only challenge we have here, we don't have the structure. So even if you create a masterpiece, nobody will know. Because there is no structure. We don't have that kind of platform where you look at, you go to an exhibition or a group exhibition and you see a critic come and say, this work, and everybody is talking about it. And it's something we have to also work on as artists in Nigeria.
Well, that kind of work was done in the past. And then the galleries came up and that was supposed to add some value also to helping emerging artists move on.
Yeah.
But also there's even more globalization. Even then there was globalization, because a good work of art will transcend a region.
For sure.
It's even easier to be global. So I thought you would have those advantages actually.
Yeah, those advantages are there now. They are there, but it's if you are not in art, like they say in religion, in fact is not known in his father's land. But in art, you must be known in your village. So first, you have to make yourself known.
You have to start from somewhere, just like every other artist. But there's one thing I want to quickly ask you. Is there a lot of movement towards sale of art more than actually building a philosophy for the art you're creating? I mean, what would you say? I think this is a very important question today. Because if it's all engineered towards sale, well, no, it will be difficult to get that masterpiece in that circumstance.
Yeah, like as I mentioned, structure. We don't really have the right structure to make an artist truly become great in Nigeria and in Africa, the Black African countries, maybe except South Africa. We still need to do more work in that area, because you find out that we don't really have true art dealers in Nigeria. We have a lot of galleries in Lagos, but it's hard for you to find an art dealer. Yeah, the people who are pretending to be dealers, yeah, they are just waiting for you to create that work. They don't want to invest anything. And if your work is not selling, they don't want to look at what you are doing. Yeah, wait until they see that you are selling before they start bothering you.
So, is it a sign of the times in terms of the global economy, for instance, starting from right here? There has never been an enabling environment, but that did not stop people from the Zaria Art Society back in the day.
Yeah, but the truth about it is that during the time of the Zaria rebels, for instance, for me, the structure actually has to be created by the artists first, which was what the Zaria rebels did. As artists, you have to come together, form your philosophy, push what you're doing. Naturally, if you do the groundwork yourself, naturally, every other thing will follow organically. But in today's world today, the artists are not coming together, particularly in their young days. So everybody is just on their own. So of course, if you are working in your studio, you still attract your patrons and people who will support you. But if we come as a group, we get more support. And that support becomes that structure that will be able to recognize who among these 4 people that exhibited. This is the work that we find very interesting. Is this healthy competition where people are together, working together? Because I remember the first Art on the Mainland exhibition. A lot of people criticized the show that all the works are substandard, all the works are this. But in the second edition, the same people that artists have created the so-called substandard works, they could also feel the progress, the development in their new works. And today, all those artists that exhibited them, they are counted among the big artists in
It's a matter of
Lagos.
time.
In Lagos today, in some circles in the world of art today, the people dictate the taste. In a society where the buyers, gallery owners, or patrons dictate the taste, you can never create great artists can come out of that society. It is the artists themselves that should create the taste,
Good.
not the other way around.
Yeah, very important. We're getting to that period when it's getting more and more difficult to really get great artists coming out. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, without those structures, it will be hard. But there are a lot of things involved, and an artist must be able to spend more time in his studio. And of course, our society too is the weight of responsibilities, and also because we also don't have these social securities that you find in the Western world, for instance. So you find yourself, and also the peer group pressure and societal pressures is a little bit hard for the artists here in particularly in Nigeria. It's really tough. But at the same time, it's not like people are not taking it. But in Nigeria, the river of life doesn't flow downward, it flows upward.
At least with Art Zero, you're trying to do the most you can. Even with social media, a lot can be done if it's
Yes,
properly
exactly.
targeted. So finally, imagine you are enjoying a cup of coffee in a specific place of your choice. Where is this location? Who would you like to be sitting with?
Well, for me, it might not be a cup of coffee, just a cup of water, a room temperature water. The location has to be under a tree.
I did say imagine, but you want to make it realistic. Okay, so you're drinking
Well,
that.
it might be under a tree and under a big tree, maybe with young people and
It has to be young people because you are a quintessential mentor, isn't it?
exactly. I have this I do tree of life. So I feel like I'm in heaven wherever I find myself under a tree.
Beautiful.
The coolness, the air you breathe. So that will be my best location.
Beautiful. I can quite imagine you in that place. Thank you so much to Arunze. It's been a real pleasure having you. You're such a warm individual. I see how you're growing, and I know a lot of it has to do with your personality. I mean, I'm not talking about the art itself, but just that person that likes to give. That person you can always go to person, and is somebody that brings people together. We do need a lot of that in the art world. We always did. And I'm happy that we have people like you around to continue the work. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time, dear listeners. Please listen to other episodes available on our website, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and YouTube. Keep in touch with us for many more interesting episodes of Coffee and Uchakeke.